What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Between the Tackles podcast. Free agency week one is in the books. That means we're back to give you more NFL content this offseason. As always, download, comment, subscribe, leave us a five-star review on Apple or Spotify. It goes a long way in helping our platform continue to grow. Follow us on the socials, as always, at TacklesPod on Instagram, TikTok, and X, as well as on Facebook. Just search Between the Tackles. You'll find us. You'll see the video clips. The video clips are also on our YouTube channel, where this video of this episode is also located. Again, download, subscribe, like, comment. Goes a long way in helping us grow our platform here. As always, I'm back with my pal, Manish. Week one free agency's in the book. How are you, Manish?
I'm doing great. It's like it's a dizzying like 4-day run where all of these players change teams, and then you forget certain players, and then you're like, oh wait, this guy. In 2 months, you'll be like, this guy's on that team. I guess I missed it.
I know, it's crazy. Like, I mean, you know, I was in a meeting at work during like the 12 o'clock hour of Monday, and I like got out of the meeting and I look at my phone. It's just like boom, 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 boom. I'm like, how? Oh, man, I got a lot of catching up to do here. But we're going to bring that all to you here at the on this episode of Between the Tackles. We're going to break down the top five worst and top five best moves, in our opinion, of free agency 2026. We're going to get right into it here. I'm going to kick it off. Number five on our list for the worst moves of free agency involves the Tennessee Titans, who spent a lot of money at the beginning of free agency. They signed former Giants wide receiver Wandale Robinson. Is a 4-year deal, $70 million, you know, 17.5 average annual value. It's pretty expensive for a guy like Robinson, $38 million in guarantees. Look, I mean, I wasn't exactly surprised that this move happened, given the fact that the new offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans is Brian Daboll. A lot of cash to dole out here to Wandale Robinson. He is only 26, which is kind of a little bit of upside there, but just seemed like a massive amount of money for a guy who really is a number two at best, maybe, but most likely a number three.
Yeah, I totally agree. Obviously, there's a lot of familiarity with Brian Daboll being the offensive coordinator there, and it's funny just if you look at what the Titans have done in this first week of free agency, it seems that their general manager has signed all former Jets and Giants. Obviously, connections with Robert Saleh being the former Jets head coach and Brian Daboll being the former New York Giants head coach. But I like Robinson actually as a number three option. Now, could he pass as a number two option? Absolutely. And if you looked at what he did without Malik Nabers last year, it was pretty solid. You cracked 1,000 yards for the first time in his career. But if you look at the 4-year sample size, he's only averaging 46 yards per game. He's only got 9 career touchdowns, and as well as he played last year, he only had 4 touchdowns. High volume catcher, but not a game breaker by any stretch of the imagination. And I understand that the Tennessee Titans are looking to add weapons for Cam Ward. I just don't think the value was there. When you look at other wide receivers that were signed in free agency, we'll get to your New England Patriots and Romeo Dobbs. They got a better deal than what the Titans got for Wandale Robinson. And even if you look at what the Giants did to replace Wandale Robinson, they got Calvin Austin from the Pittsburgh Steelers, really for pennies on the dollar on a 1-year deal. I just think when you're talking about a slot receiver of this caliber, in no way should you give him $38 million in guaranteed money, which is, by the way, the fifth most guaranteed money for any free agent wide receiver in history, which is ludicrous when you consider, you know, what kind of player Wandale Robinson actually is. So I just thought it was a severe overpay, and you know, I don't agree with what they did there. I understand the thinking in bringing in a guy that Daboll can trust, but the quality of player does not match the money that they doled out.
They just keep, you know, it's just the nature of free agency where all these guys get all this money and they roll, you know, you roll with it. You got to do what you got to do to, you know, get some talent on your roster. Who we got at number four, Manish?
Yeah, look, I'm going the offensive line. I have very strong feelings about this one. The Cleveland Browns signed former Los Angeles Chargers guard Zion Johnson to a 3-year, $49.5 million deal, 16.5 average per year, $17 million signing bonus. I understand he's only 27 years old, so there's some time left for him to improve. And if you look a little closer at the contract, it's essentially a two-year deal for $33 million, which, again, I think is outrageous because anybody who watched the Chargers play over the last several years knows how bad that offensive line was. And to be quite frank, Zion Johnson played a significant role in almost getting Justin Herbert killed. I mean, this guy was running for his life. And, you know, as a Patriot fan, Burge, you know, you saw firsthand in the playoff loss to the New England Patriots just how ineffective Justin Herbert was. I don't see the value in this. If you look at the offensive line market, outside of Tyler Linderbaum, who got a historic deal, there are a lot of comparable players that you could have gotten for a lot less. Now, these are different positions that I'm going to mention, but still, you know, quality players that were so much cheaper than what the Browns gave out for Johnson. The Giants retain Jermaine Illuminor. Again, different position, I get it. And the Lions got their center in Cade Mays, the former Carolina Panther, for, again, pennies on the dollar. I just don't think that Zion Johnson is particularly good, and I think it was a significant mistake by their general manager, Andrew Berry, and their new head coach, Todd Monken.
Yeah, I mean, for a team that is really struggling at the quarterback position, you really want to get the better guys in there to protect him. And I totally agree with you. I, you know, can picture that playoff game with the Patriots and watching Justin Herbert just get absolutely destroyed. So yeah, not a great move by Todd Monken, Andrew Berry, and the Cleveland Browns there. I'm going to move us right along to number three. It's a guy we've talked about quite a bit on here. You know, with Pete Prisco, we talked about it, you know, in our last episode as well. It's the Dolphins signing Malik Willis to be their starting quarterback. It's a three-year deal, $67.5 million, $45 million in total guarantees. Like, you know, essentially a two-year commitment there. Look, they paid this guy for what he looked like in relief of Jordan Love. Let's be real. He's only had six career starts. This familiarity, if I can even say the word, there in Miami with the head coach, Jeff Hafley, and the GM, John Eric Sullivan. It just seems like, you know, it's a waste of money. I mean, he got all that money. He's clearly not the future quarterback for this team. He's a bridge guy. You know, the Dolphins, you know, are in a position after spending all that money to cut Tua. They should be tanking for number one overall this year. I think that a lot of their other corresponding moves have indicated that they are not going for it this year. It just seems like a total waste of money. But again, that's what happens in free agency.
Yeah, I don't understand the thinking. I really don't. They're not going anywhere. Are they scratching and clawing to try to be the number seven seed in the AFC? I don't see the logic in that. And we'll get to another team in the AFC East who I think is actually doing it right. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I think the New York Jets are actually doing it right. I don't know what Malik Willis does for the long-term future of the Miami Dolphins. Is he going to be good enough to win five or six games? Maybe. And where does that put you? You want to stink this year. I hate saying that, and I know the fans don't want to hear it, but he is not good enough to get that kind of money. You're better off just getting any number of these revolving door bridge quarterbacks that you can get for, you know, $6 to $10 million on a one-year deal. I thought it was money poorly spent. It's something that we had talked about after day one of free agency. My mind hasn't changed at all. The Dolphins didn't want to pay Micah Fitzpatrick an extension, so they gave him away essentially for free to the New York Jets. You know, they're already on the hook for $54 million to Tua Tagovailoa, who is now a member of the Atlanta Falcons, and they've got to incur a $99 million dead cap hit for Tua over the next 2 years. To me, this is a perfect reset year. No Miami Dolphin fan would blame the brain trust or Stephen Ross if they just brought in and also ran quarterback for a year and then really went for it in the 2027 draft. So it was a head scratcher. I think it's money that is just extremely poorly spent on a player who's just not worth it.
Totally agree with you. Who's number two?
Yeah, look, I'm going with the Indianapolis Colts. I don't understand the idea of giving Daniel Jones a two-year, $88 million contract, which can be pushed up to $100 million. But for all intents and purposes, it's a one-year, $50 million deal for a guy who looked good for a little less than a half of a season before suffering a torn Achilles. Could you have gotten a comparable player for a lot less? I think the answer to that is a resounding yes. It's something that, you know, Pete Prisco talked to us about. He suggested Kyler Murray, but you know, you can sub out Kyler Murray for Kirk Cousins or a Geno Smith or any one of these other guys who I think, frankly, are just as good as Daniel Jones, especially coming off a torn Achilles. The Colts also invested big money right before the legal tampering period when they gave, I believe, $60 million in guaranteed money to wide receiver Alec Pierce. That's a $110 million investment, at the very least, for Daniel Jones and Alec Pierce. I don't think it makes much sense. You can talk about the corresponding move that they made, Burge, but just on the surface here, the headliner to me is I don't believe that they gave Daniel Jones, the Daniel Jones, former Giants quarterback, $50 million this year.
He knows how to make his money, Daniel Jones there. I mean, like you said, he did look good, and the Colts did really look good in the first half of last season. But then, you know, again, an Achilles injury is a pretty significant injury there. And, you know, you don't know what he's going to look like when he comes back. You know, for me, you know, doling out all this guaranteed money to these two players, the biggest thing is losing Michael Pittman in the trade where they essentially gave him away. You know, I've always been a fan of Michael Pittman and what he's done in his time with the Indianapolis Colts. And, you know, to me, it's just like you're taking a weapon away from Daniel Jones, who was a big part of their offense last year. And it's clear they're trying to obviously still go for it. You know, given their performance last year, they got to back up the trade they made for Sauce Gardner last season as well. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I tend to totally agree with you. It just seems like a massive financial commitment to a guy with a lot of unknowns associated with him.
Yeah, and I think that this is probably a make or break year for Indianapolis Colts general manager Chris Ballard. You know, I thought it was a make or break moment when he gave away the two first round picks to the Jets for Sauce Gardner, but he was retained, and I think he believes that it's got to happen now. So if he's going to overpay for Alec Pierce, overpay for Daniel Jones, so be it. I just as a quick tangent, I like Michael Pittman as a player. He's had issues staying healthy. I'm not really sure how he's a fit for the Pittsburgh Steelers, though. They've got a big-bodied wide receiver in DK Metcalf. We don't know yet if Aaron Rodgers wants to reunite with Mike McCarthy, the new head coach. But I thought that they would target a different type of player than Michael Pittman, because I feel like they've got a Michael Pittman type in DK Metcalf. But yeah, just circling back to the Colts, it's a head-scratcher, and it's a big move and a bold move by Chris Ballard.
Be interesting to see how it plays out for him. But I'm going to move on to number one. It's a team I love to hate. And it's the Buffalo Bills trading away a second-round pick for DJ Moore. Now, I can't fault the Bills for trying to address their wide receiver lack of weapon problem for Josh Allen. It was clearly a problem last year for the Buffalo Bills. So I do applaud them for taking a swing at it. I just wouldn't have made this swing. I wouldn't have made this swing for DJ Moore. I mean, I like DJ Moore as a player, but he is aging. He's 28 now. You know, he's about to be 29. So he's getting up there in age for a wide receiver. It just seemed like a massive overpay. It seemed like a massive overpay considering what a guy like Michael Pittman went for to the Steelers. We just talked about that. You know, DJ Moore, his targets have dropped over the last two seasons. You know, it screams like there's a declining sense to DJ Moore there. Obviously, you know, they could have still been in a dance with AJ Brown and the Eagles, but they have took themselves out of that by making this trade and basically guaranteeing, two or three years on DJ Moore's deal. That was the money side of it that came out of it. They had to commute some of the money to make the cap work, and they ended up fully guaranteeing a lot of his salary, which to me, you know, you're really putting your eggs in a basket there by doing that. It does reunite Moore with Joe Brady. Joe Brady was his offensive coordinator in Carolina, so he's very familiar with the type of player that DJ Moore is. I just don't think that this is going to move the needle for the Buffalo Bills.
Look, I think it's an improvement, but there's a reason that Ben Johnson did not want him. And you touched on the target drop. It was significant. 136 targets in the two previous seasons before Ben Johnson arrived, and in the Ben Johnson offense, only 85 targets. That is a off-the-cliff type of drop in targets. And if he was a difference maker in Ben Johnson's estimation, he would have found ways to get him to at least 100 targets. And he didn't get anywhere close to that. So, there's a concern there, but it is an improvement. I just think that this move that was made a couple days before the start of the legal tampering period deserves to be the worst move of this free agency period, because A.J. Brown is still available. There were reports from ESPN's Adam Schefter, NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, The Athletic's Diana Russini, that the Bills did inquire about A.J. Brown. They probably thought the price was too high and he was likely headed to a place like the New England Patriots. But here we are, toward the end of the first week of free agency. For all intents and purposes, all the bigger names and coveted free agents have been scooped up. And A.J. Brown is still a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think if you talk to Brandon Bean and Joe Brady right now, I think they might have a little buyer's remorse here. If they knew that Brown was still going to be out there, maybe they would have pushed for a more aggressive play to get him. Because if you're giving up a second, getting a fifth in return for more, just give up a little bit more for A.J. Brown, who's considerably a better player than DJ Moore. So I just think it's a terrible move. It's been a terrible first week of free agency for the Buffalo Bills and Bills Mafia. I know that brings a smile to your face, Burge, but I got to call it like I see it. Given the other options at the wide receiver position and the price tag, this was a poor decision. I mean, plain and simple.
Anytime the Buffalo Bills rank atop any worst countdown that we do, I'm loving it. But we're going to move along here, and we're going to start talking about the best moves. We're going to start getting a little bit more positive here on this episode of Between the Tackles. We got the number 5 move here. Manish, you are up first for this move. Who do you got?
Yeah, welcome. We're getting a little creative here. It's not one move. It's a collection of moves that the New York Jets and their general manager, Darren Mooji, has made. And it's not because they've signed exceptional players. Quite the contrary. The Jets have signed aging players, players who are clearly in the twilight of their career, players to one-year deals. And they've gotten, a couple quality players at cornerback. That's the former Bears cornerback. That kind of jumps out. But by and large, they have really set this up where Aaron Glenn's defense, which was horrific last year, is going to get better because they're adding some quality veterans like linebacker DeMario Davis. But when you look a little bit closer, you got to ask yourself, what are you getting out of these aging players? DeMario Davis is a former Pro Bowler for Aaron Glenn at the New Orleans Saints, but he's clearly on the downside of his career. I think leadership is his best attribute at this point. What are you going to get on the field is a bigger question mark. And they just reunited by trading for former Las Vegas Raiders quarterback Geno Smith. Everybody remembers Geno, drafted in the second round by the New York Jets when Rex Ryan was the head coach. That's how long ago it was. But Geno, I believe, is 34 years old. He led the NFL in interceptions last year. He got benched by Pete Carroll and one of the worst teams, if not the worst team in the NFL last year. So what are you actually getting from Geno Smith? I think that whether it was intended or not, this is brilliant by Darren Mooji. Because if you look at the draft capital that he has next year with the 3 first-round picks. Is it 3 first-round picks?
I think so, yeah.
They've got so many first-round picks in a very deep quarterback class in the 2027 draft. So they'll have their chance at perhaps Texas quarterback Arch Manning or Dante Moore from Oregon, who decided to stay in this year. South Carolina quarterback Lenora Sellers, Ohio State quarterback Julian Sain, Texas Tech quarterback Brendan Sorsby. Who knows? Maybe Notre Dame quarterback C.J. Carr is their pick of the litter. But there's options there for them, and I think they are lining up to have the number one pick in the 2027 NFL draft. The only team that I think can give them a legit run for their money are the Arizona Cardinals, who have done nothing of consequence in free agency as well.
No, I totally agree with you. And, you bring up the point about bringing the veteran players and guys that have been around Aaron Glenn before. I mean, granted, everybody knows what the Jets are trying to do, but that's how you can start laying framework for a culture there in New York, is if you have guys that are bought into what the coach is doing, you can start to kind of establish that. Obviously, knowing that the performance in the wins and losses aren't necessarily going to be there next year, because it kind of goes against what they're trying to do. So it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out. I'm going to move it right along to the number 4 team. And anytime this team is on a best countdown list on this podcast, I'm smiling too. I'm smiling too. It's the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots signed former Jets offensive lineman Elijah Vera Tucker. They needed to bring him. They needed to address the offensive line in some capacity after what we saw in the Super Bowl and, you know, trading Garrett Bradbury. There's been some movement in New England on that offensive line, and they needed to do something to address it and improve it. And I think Elijah Vera Tucker is a kind of a low risk, high reward type move where they did give him a little bit of money to come to New England. I don't have the contract right in front of me here, but they did give him a little bit of money, but he, when he's healthy, is a very, very good offensive lineman. And I think it's great that they're doing something to address that offensive line. I think it's going to see, you're going to see Jared Wilson move to his natural position at center this season, which I think will also just in itself create a an improvement for Wilson playing where he's very, very familiar playing on that line. And you know, this was just one move that I liked what the New England Patriots did. I think I really enjoyed seeing them bring in Romeo Doubs from Green Bay. And I think that the money was right on line there to establish him as a wide receiver, quote unquote, two. Obviously, there's still some more work to do there with the Patriots to make sure he's a number two and not a number one. And I'll get to that in a second. But I love that move. You're getting younger. He's a younger version of Stephon Diggs. Diggs is out. I can't hate on it, man. I can't hate on it. A.J. Brown, like you just talked about with the Buffalo Bills, is still available. All the reporting out there is basically saying he's going to be a Patriot or he's going to be an Eagle going into 2026. And I like the chances. I like the chances for the Patriots to pull this one off. We'll see where the time goes there. How do you feel about my Patriots there, Manish? You were the skeptic last year.
I like it a lot. I like the Elijah Vera Tucker. I liked it before I knew the details of the contract, because on the surface it looks like maybe, you know, they gave a little bit too much, but when you look closer, brilliant move by Elliott Wolf, Mike Vrabel and company. They structured it so there's a heavy emphasis on per game roster bonuses, and the total per year in this 3-year deal for per game roster bonuses is $4.25 million, which is something unlike anything I've ever seen. Now, I can't say that's the highest per game roster bonus in a contract in NFL history, but you know, I would probably say there's a 90% chance that it is, because I've never heard of that much. It's $250,000 per game if he's on the active roster, and that really is a protection, a safeguard in case Vera Tucker is injured, because he did miss last season due to a torn triceps. But beyond that, he missed, I believe, 24 games in the first four seasons of his career. So as talented and as versatile as he is, you know, he wasn't a top 15 pick for no reason. Durability has been a concern, but the Patriots protect themselves with the way they structured this deal. So if you look at the average annual value, it's interesting. It could be anywhere from $9.7 million per year on average to as much as $14 million per year. And frankly, the Patriots probably hope that it's closer to $14 million per year, because that means that AVT has played the lion's share of games while under contract. I just thought it was a brilliant signing from the jump. It's something that Greg Bedard from the Boston Sports Journal was on top of a week or so before free agency. He understood that from a scheme standpoint, this guy would be great for Mike Vrabel's offensive line. And then again, from a number standpoint and contractual structure standpoint, I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Anytime you're calling the Patriots brilliant, I'm smiling even more over here. Who we got at number three, though, Manish?
Yeah, one of the more recognizable names in free agency, a guy that I'm frankly surprised left the team that he had played for since he came into the NFL, and that's, you know, former Tampa Bay Buccaneers Pro Bowl wide receiver Mike Evans. He agreed to a 3-year deal with only $16 million in guarantees from the San Francisco 49ers. I love it. Now Evans is paired with Christian McCaffrey, Ricky Pearsall, George Kittle, all weapons for Brock Purdy. I'm sure that Baker Mayfield is not happy that Evans is out of the building. And let's be honest, he hasn't been the most durable over the last several years, but he's an instant red zone threat for San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan will know exactly how to use him. I love the signing. And you know, Mike Evans said that he did his own research, and in his mind, he wanted to go to one of two places: the San Francisco 49ers, his top choice, which is where he landed, or your beloved Buffalo Bills, Burge. And he did not go to Buffalo. He felt that the 49ers offense was one piece away. He feels like he's that one piece. He slides right into the spot that Brandon Ayuk occupied. And this is probably the subplot to this story. I think the pettiest move in free agency is that Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and the San Francisco 49ers are still holding on to Brandon Ayuk. If you remember, I believe he was suspended last year because he failed to show up. He just did not want to play. I think he lost something like $30 million of guaranteed money that clearly irked 49ers decision makers. So they're still holding on to him. I think ultimately, I mean, they will obviously cut him at some point, and I'm pretty sure he'll wind up with Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. But I just think it's funny on some level that they clearly are sending a message to players on their roster right now that if you handle yourself like Brandon Ayuk handled himself in 2026, we're not going to cut you any breaks. Because, you know, honestly, if you cut him now, cut him a week ago, he's got options. Teams have money, and they can explore potentially adding Brandon Ayuk. But the longer you hold on to him, that really narrows his options because the money dries up for teams. And frankly, the 49ers don't care because of the way that Brandon Ayuk acted. I also thought it was interesting that Ayuk's personal wide receivers coach, former Cincinnati Bengals wide receiver TJ Houshmandzadeh, came out and really said, hey, it's inexcusable. What Ayuk did is inexcusable. And I applaud him for doing that and not being a yes man in Ayuk's camp.
Absolutely. Anytime I hear TJ Houshmandzadeh's name, I just think of the fantasy football commercial from all those years ago. TJ, who's your mama? Let's kick it on to number two here. Bengals signed former Kansas City Chiefs safety Brian Cook to a 3-year, $40 million deal. Look, the Bengals defense was atrocious last year. We buried them all season. And Zach Taylor and the Cincinnati Bengals are addressing their defense. Love that. We talked about Brian Cook with Pete Prisco about how he might be one of the steals of free agency, and he lands on a team that desperately needed that type of player. He had the fifth lowest missed tackle rate among DBs last year, and he's replacing a guy who had the fifth highest missed tackle rate in Geno Stone. So I think the Bengals, you know, on top of everything else they're doing with addressing their defense, They're doing this offseason correct. And, I think Joe Burrow is very happy to see his defense improving.
Yeah, it's a move that they needed to make. Like as you said, they were atrocious on all levels. Brian Cook, one of the best players in free agency, and Pete Prisco, really capitalized it perfectly. Mm-hmm. $13 million on average. I think it's well worth it. Safety was a deep position in this free agency. Brian Cook instantly makes a team that had all sorts of tackling issues better by coming into the building.
Who do we have at number one on our best moves of free agency list of 2026, Manish? Take it away.
It's the best move and the most controversial move of this 2026 NFL free agency. I think the Ravens' decision to back out of the Max Crosby trade with the Las Vegas Raiders is the single best decision made by any team in this free agency. And I know that Baltimore Ravens general manager Eric DaCosta got some heat. People wondering, did he have buyer's remorse? Just cold feet. When he saw that, Trey Hendrickson's market value was dipping as the days in free agency were going by. And he probably thought, do I really want to live without a first-round pick in 2026 and 2027 for an aging Max Crosby? So, look, people can blame the Ravens all they want. My position has been pretty firm on this, is that I blame the NFL for having a flawed system like this. There's a gray area there. The Ravens, in my mind, played within the rules of a very flawed system. They get their number 14 pick in the 2026 draft back now, in addition to the 2027 draft. Was Max Crosby's knee really the reason why the Ravens backed out? Crosby's surgeon, Dr. Neil Elitrosh, talked to ESPN insider Adam Schefter in recent days and came out and said that Crosby's right on schedule in his rehab from the meniscus repair that he underwent. And the Raiders brass, frankly, after all of this mess, Tom Brady, Clint Kubiak, the general manager, John Spytek, have gotten word out now that Max Crosby will not be traded. He will be on the Raiders for the 2026 season. Frankly, it's a bargain. For the deal that they got him on last year, the market for pass rushers has jumped exponentially since that deal was signed. So they get a bargain for a player that they obviously believed in before. Max Crosby, whether he wants to stay with the Raiders or not, is up for debate. But, I love what the Ravens did. I frankly did. Pivoting, getting Trey Hendrickson without giving up the two first-round picks. Brilliant move for a veteran pass rusher. That's kind of where I stand. I know it's been a hot topic of conversation over the last several days. I love it. I love that the Ravens got Hendrickson and kept both of their first-round picks.
I think it's a great story and great to see the controversy come out in free agency. I mean, to me, like, I don't necessarily call it calculated or cutthroat. I think it's a little bit of both. I think they got cold feet where they realized Trey Hendrickson was sliding and sliding and sliding, and they had just made this monster trade, and they're like, oh, well, let's look for an out. And the perfect out is to blame the medical reasons. He's coming off injury, and to see that happen, I think it's a sleazy move. To think about it, like, I don't know how anybody would want to make deals with the Ravens if they were worried about something like this happening again. I do agree with you though about blaming the league for this, because we kind of talked about it on our last episode about how stupid the legal tampering period is at the end of the day, where it should just be, let's just open the doors and everything becomes official, that day. I think it's a stupid system, just like you do. That, to me, that doesn't excuse the sleaziness of this move here. I mean, if you want to go on and read something good, you can just go check out Jason Lockenfora's Twitter feed on this. Absolutely taking belt to ass on the Ravens. It's unbelievable, and it's an unbelievable read. If you don't like the Ravens, you want to see somebody bash that team. It's great. I mean, to me, I don't buy what DaCosta said about pairing the two of them together. I don't buy that. I really don't. I think that's just a cover up to try to save face a little bit. Where that goes, but at the end of the day, Max Crosby is going to be a member of the Raiders, and I think it's going to be, it's going to be just such an awkward situation. They just shipped you out. There's obviously been issues going on between the team and Crosby, and now basically you're, I don't want to be say being held hostage, but you have to honor your contract at the end of the day. So,
I'd love to be held hostage for $35 million a year.
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
Sign me up. I thought it was interesting that, look, the Raiders, I should say, they could have backed out on some of these other deals. They were verbal deals. Agreements because they'd have to allocate the money back on their budget, the Crosby money. But the Raiders decided to keep that money. Obviously, that was highlighted by the historic deal for former Ravens center Tyler Linderbaum. Just killed the center market by 50% more than what Creed Humphreys, the previously highest paid center in the NFL, was making. So they honored their commitments, their verbal commitments. I thought that was interesting, a little bit telling. At
revenge.
The end of the day, great story. I mean, you hit it on it right from the jump. Everybody likes drama, and I thought this played out like a soap opera. I'm not sure I agree with you that the teams would not be willing to deal with the Ravens moving forward, because at the end of the day, if you love a player, even recent history doesn't really matter from the experience that I've seen.
This is a This was all revenge by the Ravens for the Raiders signing away their center. That's the storyline that should be told. They didn't like that they stole their center, so you know what? You spent all that money on him. Screw you. We're gonna give you your guy back. But there you have it. There's the top five worst, top five best. We got one more honorable mention for best signing on this list. It's another guy we talked about with Pete Prisco. And it was the Bears signing safety from the Seahawks, Kobe Bryant, to a 3-year, $40 million deal. Dennis Allen obviously loved this. Bears defense needed some help. It was evident in the playoffs this year. And, Kobe Bryant looked great on a route to a Super Bowl for the Seattle Seahawks. Pete Prisco loves this guy. And, I tend to agree with him. I think it's a good move. Just not as good as the top five that we had listed here. You got anything to add on him there, Manish?
No, it was a great move. Again, safety was a deep class. I'm going to wrap it up with the weirdest move, I think, in free agency, the biggest surprise. Not a big money issue, but just the team and the player. John Harbaugh and the New York Giants thought that it was smart to bring back their former first-round bust offensive lineman, Evan Neal, the former number 7 pick in the draft. Did not work out in any way. Just a complete, utter bust. Why they brought him back, I don't quite understand. Obviously for cheap. But I think that was not on my bingo card. I would have guessed that it was a fait accompli that Neal was not going to be on the Giants. But yeah, he's back in Big Blue.
So, yeah, I mean, Harbaugh sees something he likes.
Yeah. That's going to wrap it up. I just want to reiterate what Birch said off the top. Be sure to subscribe, download, rate, give us a 5-star review if you're enjoying the podcast. Spread the message. That will go a very long way to helping us grow. Please comment as well. We like engaging back and forth with our listeners and our viewers. Remember, you can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, X. We're at TacklesPod. We're also Between the Tackles on Facebook and on YouTube. We are trying to grow our subscriber base on YouTube, so please subscribe and comment there as well. Just a lot going on with this podcast moving forward in the offseason with a lot of great guests touching all corners of the NFL, and we really appreciate you guys listening, tuning in, and giving us feedback.
As always, we will catch you next time on Between the Tackles. See ya!